Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And here's a shovel watch piece, in a way, from our Uncommon Economic Indicators Project, our current crowdsourcing project here on the Brian Lehrer Show. You can contribute to post a photo, a video, or a story about the economic indicators in your neighborhood. And one that came in over the weekend is titled Solar Ambivalence. And it says, I am in a partnership that markets solar electric generation systems to residential co-ops. While the residents and boards are enthusiastic about the concept, there are several generous state and federal subsidies or tax credits available as well. But nevertheless, the need to assess, borrow, or tap reserve funds for the initial capital cost pose additional costs to resident shareholders in the buildings that give them pause in this current environment. So funny enough, while we're trying to green things as a stimulus, there's an uncommon economic indicator that got posted on our site yesterday, about a resistance to greening. Post your uncommon economic indicator to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, New York City has been construction site city for most of the last 25 years as real estate has increased in value, and especially during the Bloomberg years as the mayor has pushed development as a central goal. So what happens to construction city when the economy goes this far south? We will get a perspective now from Ken Levian, founder of Levian & Company, a leading construction site management firm here in New York. Their clients have been including many nonprofits such as Carnegie Hall, the American Red Cross, Coalition for the Homeless, the Central Synagogue, and the Islamic Cultural Center of New York alike, the Franklin Roosevelt Four Freedoms Park on Roosevelt Island, and I could go on. Ken, thanks for coming in. Welcome to WNYC.
It's my pleasure to be here, Brian.
First, tell us a little bit more about what your company does. You joked to me over the phone that you're like a developer for hire. What does that mean?
Well, we're a company that basically begins a project from site selection and programming all the way through to post-occupancy analysis. So we would assist a client who is not a normal builder, a developer per se, with with their development projects in the region, helping them select their design team, their construction team, and overseeing the project as it goes through development.
How long have you been doing this?
I started this in 1992. I had been doing it privately before that. I'm a former practicing architect, actually.
So you've seen the physical city change a lot, and you've helped to foster that change. How different would you say the city is today from when you first started in this business roughly 30 years ago?
Well, when I first started, we were in the midst of another recession in the late 70s, and that led to a huge building boom that took place during the 1980s. In the 1980s in particular, we saw the New York, especially the commercial office building stock, grow by almost 60 million square feet. Currently, New York City has about 450 million square feet of space. Then during the 1990s, there was a lull. There was no question about it. The dot-com boom had not yet really hit.
This was the late 80s, early 90s, after the 1987 stock market crash.
Exactly. There was another lull. And then in the 90s, again, there was building done, but not at the same rapid pace. Post 2002, there's been a tremendous amount of building going on in New York City.
How would you describe the construction industry overall right now? So much of the country seems to be in a kind of shock.
Well, it is pretty shocking what's happening because it happened so quickly. You have to remember that last year, the construction industry represented about $1.1 trillion of about a $13, $14 billion economy, or about 6 or 7% of the economy. So it's a major indicator of the economic health. To date, and I'll talk about New York City getting locally, we actually had a record last year of construction in New York at about $33.8 billion worth of construction. Currently, we're anticipating somewhere in the same neighborhood being completed this year, even though there are indicators coming around that we may find ourselves stopping almost $5 billion of construction. But next year, 2010, is really the year that's going to be the issue. We estimate that there will be somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 to $25 billion, which is why the stimulus package matters so much.
You talk about projects stopping. Since this did come up on us so suddenly, You probably had a lot going when the crisis really hit in September. What happens to those projects?
Well, our commercial work did stop to a large degree. Projects that were ongoing, that were already, let's say, more than 50-60% completed, continued through that process. Projects that were on the board, so to speak, still in design, have basically stopped. And this included residential buildings, some commercial projects, two hotel projects. So those projects did stop. Interestingly, our not-for-profit clients, which represents, as you said, 75% of our business, continue to move forward.
How come?
Well, I think that not-for-profits build on a different thought process. If you're a commercial builder, you build when you perceive a need and you'll be able to make a profit. Not-for-profit clients have different goals. First of all, their main goal is program. In other words, is it a theater? Is it an art museum? Is it a school? So their program becomes the first major goal. In addition to that, their needs are complicated, which is something a little bit different than a for-profit, because a not-for-profit doesn't need to make money. They build as necessary.
How would you assess Mayor Bloomberg's impact on the physical city? He's made such a priority out of construction. Sometimes it's controversial. Sometimes people love it. But how would you say this mayor has left his mark on the physical city?
Oh, he's been tremendous. I think that the mayor recognizes the power of growth in the city and that real estate is a major mover in the city. He's very dedicated to cultural and art institutions, and you can see it by all the major renovation projects and expanded museum and theater projects that have taken place. I think Lincoln Center is a prime example of $1 billion being spent. A significant portion of that is city money, and it's going to be a terrific help to the city.
Tell me about the Four Freedoms Park.
Well, the Four Freedoms Park is a wonderful project. It is actually on Roosevelt Island on the tip. The idea was designed, believe it or not, by Louis Kahn in 1973 and 74. He passed away in 74, and it has sat on the shelf for 35 years. The Roosevelt Foundation has now decided to
move the project. That's another mark of the not-for-profit sector, by the way, isn't it?
Yes, and I think it's kind of interesting that it's Roosevelt, and we're entering a period of deep recession. He was very strong with the WPA, which had a major arts component in it for art, literature, parks, music. In fact, I just saw a beautiful Max Baum sculpture in your foyer, which was obviously done during the 1935 law. The Four Freedoms Park will be a beautiful park of 4 acres on the tip of Roosevelt Island, and it is a partnership of government funding and private funding.
And it's on Roosevelt Island.
It will be on Roosevelt Island, and it's shovel ready.
What'll be there?
It'll be a beautiful sort of esplanade leading up to this beautiful room, which will be a memorial to Franklin Roosevelt.
It's beyond shovel ready, really, right? It's almost done.
No, it hasn't started yet.
Oh, it really hasn't?
No, it hasn't started yet. We'll be breaking ground in July.
Oh, I see. Now, you would probably have a lot of projects that fit the definition of shovel ready. Are you watching the stimulus bill debate with an eye to New York construction?
Very much so. I think that one of the things that I was disappointed to read this morning was that they've removed about $16 billion for education construction, which I think is a terrible mistake.
School construction had been at a much higher level, $16 billion, you're exactly right, removed by the Senate from the original House version. I don't know if there's anything left in there for that. I don't know how that wouldn't be considered stimulative, because that's infrastructure, that's construction jobs, and it leaves a permanent infrastructure.
Absolutely, and it also employs teachers. It's an ongoing, continuing process. I mean, that's why something like Lincoln Center, per se, which has teaching elements and employs people such as musicians and a huge administration, it's a continuing benefit. And that's why I think arts and education, libraries, parks, these projects matter.
Arts funding, the $50 million that was originally in for the National Endowment for the Arts, you see that as stimulative?
Oh, absolutely. Frankly, if you take a look at it, I don't know if you realize this, but Orson Welles got his start during the WPA, and it was funded by that, as was Diego Rivera.
Did you happen to see, because I didn't see it in any of the press coverage, whether the $50 million was retained in the Senate version for art?
I don't know. I didn't see that.
And it's funny because when we think about arts funding, we usually think about artists or arts organizations doing their work. We don't think about construction and infrastructure.
Well, it's a major piece of it. You know, you need a place to perform. You need a place for the art to be. And the construction that takes place usually in the not-for-profit sector for museums and for theaters is at a very high quality, by the way.
Is construction an industry where management and union are working together right now?
Yes, I'm not a party to it, but I understand that the unions are currently considering some incentives which will help bring down and moderate some of the costs that have increased over the past 3 years by almost 35%.
Really? Costs increased by 35% just in the last 3 years? Yeah. Mostly labor costs?
No, it was a combination of labor and materials, but obviously with what's happening in China and India right now in our own economy, the cost of commodities is starting to come down to some degree.
Developers often complain, and I'm sure I don't have to tell you, that New York is so expensive compared to other places to build. Of course, it's expensive to do everything here. But because of labor costs and taxes and government regulation, is that your experience and to the detriment of the city?
Well, I mean, New York is a very expensive place to build. And one of the problems that you have is New York City being, especially Manhattan Island, being a constrained space, there's almost so much space that you can build. You don't have the ability to use adjacent lots necessarily for building. The cost of labor here, you need union labor, which is highly professional and understands safety measures. And, you know, it's just simply an expensive place to build. We are about twice as expensive as a city like Atlanta.
What do you think New Yorkers in general need to know about construction in the city that we typically don't know? In so many fields, you know, there are things that the media covers which tend to be hot-button things, and then there are things that are really important. And whenever I meet somebody from whatever industry or whatever sector of life, they say, you know what you never talk about in the media? Does anything like that come to mind for you?
Well, I mean, I think that people often view construction in New York City as a nuisance. You know, they're trying to get somewhere on the Long Island Expressway, or they're trying to get down a block, and there's a huge crane that's just been put up. But so much of New York City's lifeblood is based in construction. As a $34 billion industry, it is a major industry in New York City.
Though people have been concerned, and I'll tell you, our news department, as well as the Daily News, did investigations on construction site accidents over the last few years when there's been so much in the pipeline that even the city admits they can't keep up. The buildings department can't keep up with inspections on everything that's going on. How do you deal with that massive push at the same time, even, you know, from your manager's perspective, with respect to safety?
Well, all of our projects have a tremendous amount of controls on them. We develop a safety plan right from the very beginning. Our not-for-profit clients are very careful about what they're doing. The cost of the construction, the quality of the construction is higher than in commercial buildings. And going with that requires a certain amount of on-site observation that basically helps ameliorate some of those kinds of issues.
You're an architect by training. Have you seen the design of buildings change for hard times now or in the past? Maybe it's too soon for this recession, but is there an aesthetic aspect to architecture? Like people tend to dress more modestly in hard times. Do they also design buildings differently?
You know, it's funny you should say that. I just read an editorial recently, I can't remember exactly where, discussing the fact that a lot of our buildings have been somewhat overindulgent. Architecture for architecture's sake versus, you know, the old concept of program comes first. And the program should be reflected in the architecture. I think we will see a simpler form of architecture. Some of our projects are actually simplifying themselves right now in order to meet the program at a lower cost. So architecture for architecture's sake, I think, will be moderated over the next few years.
Before you go, I happened to see a news story that mentioned that you were a judge last month for the first annual McGraw-Hill Construction Best of the Best Awards, a national competition that recognizes design and construction excellence. What do you look for when judging design and construction excellence?
Well, there were five or six major categories. I think the first was, did the project itself meet the program as described by the client. The second was how well the architect worked as a team with his sub-consultants, with the construction companies. Number three were the aesthetics. Yes, the aesthetics do matter. Number four was the usability of the project. Would the ultimate users really be able to enjoy the project as designed? And the last criteria really is the cost-benefit, if they spent money wisely. And those were really the basic elements.
Want to give a shout-out to one of the winners?
Well, one of the winners was this magnificent church. It was actually the great winner, the number one project of the year, which was a church that I've never seen anything like it before, built in concrete and steel, mesh, and it was very, very elegant and not terribly expensive.
Where?
I believe it was in Southern California.
All right. Ken Levian, founder of Levian & Company, a construction site management firm that does 75% of their work in the not-for-profit sector in New York City. Thanks a lot. Good luck out there.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute. If you're familiar with dry cleaning prices for men's and women's clothing, you will understand why we will ask the question, are women being taken to the cleaners? Stay with us.